Yeshaya, Perik Yudalit, Pasik Yud Gimel. Yudalit Yud Gimel. V'yatomarta b'levavcha. Again, we are continuing our discussion of the fall of the Babylonian Empire. And we are referring specifically to Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar, the truth is, the Malchus of Babel spanned three kings. As we know, we mentioned many times, it was 70 years from start to end, exactly 70 years. And it spanned three kings. Nebuchadnezzar, who, as we remember, was a student or a soldier in the army of Sanherith. Nebuchadnezzar was a carryover from the Malchus of Ashur. Yeah. Okay, but he was one of the soldiers that fought the battle to conquer Yerushalayim, and he was one of the few people that survived. Although there was an enormous number of soldiers that miraculously were killed that night, he was from the few that a child can count on his fingers that survived. And he somehow, years later, became the king of Babel. Then there was his son Evel Merodach, and his grandson Belshazzar. These were the three kings that spanned 70 years, the Malchus of Babel, and here we are describing the fall of Babel. I'm referring specifically to the downfall of Nebuchadnezzar. Now, with his death, Babel did not come to an end. We still have more years. We have his son and his grandson, but it was on the way down. And the Pesukim are describing his extreme arrogance, how he felt that he can conquer the world, and things that he thought, things that he said. And here we have more quotes from what he actually would say in the future. Remember, Yeshai is speaking here before Nebuchadnezzar came to power. But this is all prophecy. V'yato amarta, you said, b'levavcha, in your heart. So I guess this is an expression, it was a thought. We have a similar idea of Haman. V'yomer Haman b'libo. Haman said in his heart that Lemiyasa, who to whom does the king want to give honor? And Ahasuerus asked Haman, what should I do to give honor to a person that the king wants to honor? Yeah. How should we give honor? So Haman said, Blibo, Lemiyach bot seba lachlasos yukor yosa mimeni. Chazal have a drasha, and they say that a rasha, the person's mind is under the control of a heart, of their heart. As we find by Haman, Vayomer Haman b'libo, and here as well, Nebuchadnezzar said the following statement of arrogance in his heart. Their emotions control their intellect. By tzaddikim, the intellect controls their emotion. Vayomer Hashem el libo. Hashem is, of course, the ultimate tzaddik, and Hashem spoke el libo concerning the churban when he decided to destroy the world, the time of the Mabel. So there's a famous medrash. Rishayim, their minds are under the control of their hearts, whereas Tzadikim, their hearts are under the control of their minds. And here is one of the two psukim that are cited in reference to a Rasha. We have Yonad Yoma coming up, Purim, and here we have Nebuchadnezzar, V'yabato Amarta, Bilvavicha, in your heart, Hashamayim Ele, I will ascend to the heaven, Mimal L'chaychvei El, above the stars of L'chaychvei El, simply means the mighty. El normally means might. That's the simple translation, the powerful stars. Here it can refer to the stars of Hashem, the stars of God. Arim ki si, I will elevate my throne. I will put my throne above the stars, the mighty stars, and above the heaven. The eshev, and I will sit behar mo'ed. I will sit, I will put my throne in the mountain of meeting. Biyar kiseit sofra. Okay, two expressions. First of all, har mo'ed refers to Yerushalayim. Why is har mo'ed referred to Yerushalayim? It's just like the ohel mo'ed. We have in last week's parasha and this week's parasha and throughout the Ohel Moed in the Midbar, Moed means a place of meeting where the Shekhinah, where Hashem is mitzamsim, his Shekhinah to rest among the Jewish people. It's the place of meeting. In the Midbar, it was in a tent. The Mishkan was nothing more than a tent. But in the Beis HaMikdash was the permanent structure, the Mikdash. It was on Har Tzion, Yerushalayim. So here it's Har Moed, something that you don't hear too often. We're more familiar with the Ohel Moed. But the Har Moed is the parallel to the Ohel Moed. And that you see here, a very unique expression we find here in this pasuk. I will put my throne on the Har Moed, meaning I will conquer Yerushalayim. Biyar Kisei Tzofa. Now, Yar Kisei means the innermost. like a yarech, a thigh. A thigh represents a person's privacy. The center, or the thigh, is the center of the body. It's private and it's the center, same idea. It's from the north. And this means that Yerushalayim, it's hard for us to picture the geography of Yerushalayim, because what was the inhabited, what part of Eretz was settled at this point in time? There were many enemies who made inroads in the Jewish land, the Palestinians and the other nations. So Yarkeset Safan refers to Yerushalayim. It's the innermost part of the north of Eretz Yisrael. I'm not exactly sure how in geography at the time when, but you have to think of Yerushalayim was the northern, the northeastern part of Eretz Yisrael, or at least of the Malchus of Yehud. That's for sure. That the Malchus of Klal Yisrael was divided between the Malchus of Yisrael and the Malchus of Yehuda. Now, the Malchus of Yisrael was the north. That's clear. That's all the majority. You take Eretz Yisrael, the biblical Eretz Yisrael, and the Hashem promised Avraham Avinu, the northern part of even today modern Eretz Yisrael would be primarily occupied by the Malchus of Yisrael. The lower region is the Malchus of Yehuda. So that, but the top, the very tip, the uppermost part of the Malchus of Yehuda was where Yerushalayim was located. So Yerushalayim was the north, was clearly the north part of the Malchus of Yehuda. So it was known as Tzofon, Yerushalayim. Where is Yerushalayim? If you are in the Malchus of Yehuda, it's the top. Go up to the north. Now, it's not the north mamish of the whole Eretz Yisrael, because the whole Eretz Yisrael goes much, much higher, especially going back to the biblical Eretz Yisrael. It goes all the way up to Lebanon, even higher. How far you go up north? But that was the area of Yisrael. That was not the region of Yehuda. So, as far as Yehuda is concerned, Yerushalayim is the north, and the Yargaseh means the innermost portion of the north, the center, the special section of the north is where Yerushalayim is located, and that's where I will establish my throne, Nebuchadnezzar says. So Nebuchadnezzar in this pasuk is making two statements. I will conquer the heavens and I will conquer the earth. The heavens refer to Kadosh Baruch Hu. I'll take control of what's going on up there, above the mighty, mighty stars, and above in the heaven where Hashem is, and this earth, what's the capital of the world? The capital of the world is Yerushalayim. That's the Yark Seitzafon. That's the Har Moed. I will put my throne. I will conquer that as well. She'll be aware that Nebuchadnezzar himself never went to Yerushalayim, because Nebuchadnezzar was so terrified that from that night of when Asherah tried to conquer Yerushalayim, where every soldier except for a few survived, he was so terrified he would never return to that location. Instead, he would send his generals, Nebuzaradan, and they would set up a staging area at the distance, so he would come and watch what's going on, but he would refuse to come anywhere near Yerushalayim itself. Yet it seems to say that he, at this point, when he's making the statement, at least the Yishai's prediction, he's making the statement, he's not afraid that he will plan to set up his throne somewhere in that region, in Yerushalayim. Pasuk Yudalet. Ele, continuing the statement and the thoughts of Nebuchadnezzar, Ele, I will ascend. Al, upon, Bomo, say off. Now, Bomo means a platform. Platform, of is a cloud. I will ascend upon the highest part of the cloud. In other words, I'm going to fly to heaven. We don't really know what this means. This, it could be they had technology that we are not aware of. I mean, today you would say, what's the today? You would take this program literally. You'll have a space station, satellites, and you'll have you'll explore Mars. I mean, the technology is out there. It's just a matter of how many trillions of dollars you have to go play around with these high-tech toys. But like you would say today, you would say, okay, I'll go and I'll conquer, I'll set up satellites and different planets, whatever. But in ancient times, I mean, what does this mean? Maybe we don't know. There was something that they had. They knew that we do not know. But nevertheless, the pasuk does say, whether it's to be meant literally, or it's meant to be it's a metaphor. I will conquer the bama se'av. I will ascend to the highest point of the cloud, the platform of the cloud, the highest point above the cloud. Adane le'elyon. I will be similar. I will compare myself to the utmost high. Referring, Elyon here refers to Hashem. To Nebuchadnezzar, this is the ultimate arrogance of Nebuchadnezzar. This pasuk is cited often in Chazal. It's the spitz. the most arrogant thing a person can say, Adame le'elyon, I will compare myself to Hashem. There's God and there's me. We're equal. Mm-hmm. I'm also God.
So he's molded into a God.
Good point. So perhaps yes, it could be yes. He was not an atheist. It was not, atheism is something which came is pagans. I mean, that's
God.
He worshipped many. I don't know the answer. You ask a good question. I'm not familiar. I don't have the background to answer the question. But in this pasuk, he seems to be saying that he recognizes, at least the simplest understanding, he recognizes that there is a creator, an Elyon, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he's saying, no big deal, I am just as great as HaKadosh Baruch Hu. How did that play out in the beliefs in people in ancient times? The Kastim, they had many gods, they had no gods. It seems that in ancient times, everyone was a believer in something. Atheism is something which is 19th, 20th century. It's a new thing to deny God's existence, that the world, everything happens by chance and evolution. I mean, evolution is not necessarily, whatever, it's not necessary, but it appears he did believe in something. And here, from this simple interpretation, he believes in Kadosh Baruch Hu, and he's coming to challenge the Creator, Adame Lo Elyon. Period. Now, there is something very, this pasuk, although it is the ultimate arrogance, it is the ultimate gaivan chutzpah, Chazal used this pasuk in a positive sense. And they say that Adam, there are primarily four terms for man. Ish, Gever, Enosh, and Adam. Four terms for man. Three of the four have plurals. They're Enosh, Anoshim, Ish, Ishim, Gever, Givarim. But Adam, there is no plural. There is no plural for the word Adam. Why? Because Adam, this is what they say, this is what's different, I don't know where this Chazal are. Adam means, that's true, it's exactly excellent. Adam comes from Adam, from the earth, which is the lowest, the most gashmi, the most mundane item in this world. But yet Adam also represents man's potential, Adameh lo Elyon. Not in the arrogance of Nebuchadnezzar to challenge him to be an equal, but Mahu Rachum Af Ato Tehirachum Mahu Chanun Af Ato, just like Hashem does Chesed, you do Chesed, to emulate Hevei Domelo, to be similar to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Adameh Lo Elyon. Adam's role, Adam's mission is to be similar to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And just as HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Echad, Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokein Hashem Echad, there's no plural Chas v'shalom for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that's the ultimate kefira, there's no plural. Adam, there is no plural, because Adam reflects, it represents that concept of trying to be similar to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to go in his ways. So it's fasting. On the one hand, Adam means earth. It's mundane, the most extreme opposite that you come to spirituality. But yet Adam also refers to Adameh, from the Sharish, I will compare myself. To whom? It's understood as in this pasuk, Lo Elyon, to the spiritual, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It captures what is man's role in this world, to take the Gashmias and to transform it, to elevate it, to infuse it with spirituality. This is man's role, to be Adam, Ofer Minho Adama, but yet to be Adameh Lo Elyon. Beautiful idea, the purpose of creation. And yet over here we have this pasuk, and where does the pasuk coming from? It's coming from the ultimate kefir and gaiva. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says about gaiva, mean about gaiva, we cannot exist. There's not enough room in the whole world for myself, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and about gaiva to coexist. It's unbelievable. The same pasuk represents gaiva, the extreme of gaiva, and the purpose of man's creation, Adame Lo Elyon. Yes, that's exactly what it
is.
100%. That's what we do the whole, every day we do that over here. Every day, that's the Yeshaya, because the psukim are so vague. They're so vague, they're interpreted in so many layers, so many different interpretations, different facets of each pasuk. Yet, we're dealing with a statement that Nebuchadnezzar is making. And yet, Lefi Chazal, there's a lesson, there's prophecy. And prophecy is a divine revelation that Hashem put in the mind of Yeshaya to teach the world. And it's something for every person to learn from for, and every day of his life. Adam. Oh, so Adam. So Yavos, and Ato Chonein Le'odom Das Umelameid Le'enosh Bina. You have to match up. Das goes with the word Adam, and Bina, Enosh, is Bina. Okay, there's a lot of drush, and that's for another time, of why...
Adam.
First word is Adam. Adam, Kiakrev mikem carbon. By carbonos, we have Adam, correct. So you have to... Four different terms for man. Each one has a different connotation. Gever, Adam, Ish, and Enosh. And how they play out with verbs and how they're used. But here, this is what how one of the term Adam is. There are two terms Adam: Earth, Adama, and Adame Le'elyon. And that's why Adam is the only term among the nouns describing man that has no plural, because it represents our idea to be similar to Hashem, and Hashem is Echad. Pasuk Tesvav. Ach. So Yeshaya says in response to the arrogance of the Nebuchadnezzar, ach, however, or but, or certainly, El Sheol Turag, you will descend to the grave. You think you're an equal to God. You'll die just like every other person in this world. El Yar Kisei, to the end, the innermost part, Yar Kisei Var. This is a play on the word. The beginning of the pasuk before Nebuchadnezzar and his arrogance, so that he will conquer the Yar Kisei Tzafon. He will conquer the innermost part of the north. A reference to the holiest place in the world. The holiest place in the world, Yerushalayim, is described the Yar Kisei, the Yarech, the innermost part of the north. What's the punishment to the Nebuchadnezzar? You will go into the Yar Kisei Bar, the innermost depth of the earth, the pit, where you will be buried. You will die like every other person. Pasik Tezayin, Reyecha. Now, Reyecha here means those who have seen you in your glory. That's a personal understanding. Those who once, the Nebuchadnezzar, they remember when you were alive. Wow, what an incredible person he was. He conquered the world. Elecha to you, Yashkichu. They will stare at you. When they see your downfall, they will see how low you have fallen. They will, wow, I remember him in his glory. And look what became of him, a nothing of a nothing. Elecha to you, Yashkichu. They will look, they will stare. Elecha to you, Yisbonanu. They will contemplate. They will be in a state of shock, and they will think. They'll stop in their tracks. Can this really be? Yeah. Is this the same person? That same person who conquered the world? He's fallen to such a low. Hazeh Ish. Is this really the man? Margis Aretz, that terrified the world, caused the world to shake. Margis means to terrorize to the degree where people shake. Marish. He caused the quake, Mamlochos, kingdoms. Kingdoms, Kaviyachal, the whole kingdom shook when they heard every move he made. The whole world was transfixed on his next move. They were trembling. They trembled.
Yirguzu Amin.
What?
We say that. Yirguzu Amin.
Yirguzu Amin, correct. The same idea. So here, Marish Mamlochos, they're going to say, they can't, this is what it is, when they see these incredible fall. Pasuk Yitzayim, Dairin. Some, what did Nebuchadnezzar do in his lifetime? Some he transformed Tevel, the earth. Tevel means the inhabited earth. The earth that we've said before, the Tevel is not necessarily a complimentary term to people living on this world. It refers to people that do sins. Like Tevel Asu, the same letters as abomination. We mentioned before about Noach. We say on the Nusach HaTfilah Yom LeRam, V'gam Esnech Bav Zacharta, you promise L'Havro Zarka Afros Tevel. Tevel means that his seed will increase and occupy the entire earth, but when we look back, it's not a compliment, because most of the descendants of Noach are not Shomer Torah Mitzvah, or even they don't keep the seven mitzvahs of Noach. So it's a derogatory term of people that just live for the sake of living, not for a higher purpose. But the pasuk here does say that some, what did Nebuchadnezzar accomplish in his lifetime? He would take Tevel, the inhabited earth. He would transform Tevel, Kamidbar. He would conquer nations. And when he conquered, his conquest was complete. He would uproot the people living in the land and remove them and the land was desolate like a desert. The Arav Haras, and the cities, mighty cities Haras, he would overthrow, trample, and demolish. Asirav loifosach boisa. You did not want to be a prisoner of Nebuchadnezzar. It wasn't like America, where you have nice big prisons and comfortable accommodations. Amalcha shel chesed, criminals have comforts. If you were a prisoner in the jail of Nebuchadnezzar, Asirav, his prisoners, loifosach boisa, the door was never opened.
Yeah.
They didn't go out for lunch. They didn't go out to the library to read books. They didn't work. The door of their cell was locked permanently. The Midrashim said that Asirav also means chains. That, you know, today when a prisoner, you know, you see a prisoner on television on the news that they're taken and they're coming to court with handcuffs,
shackles,
and then after they're released, and also they come with their feet, you know, with their feet also. And I was once visiting some of the hospitals. There was a prisoner there that needed medical attention. So there was a guard. There was a police officer, you know, with stripes on and a weapon, automatic weapon. And the prisoner was walking around in his orange costume and shackles on his hands and shackles on his feet. And he was being taken. He had a doctor's appointment. There was no doctor's appointments for the prisoners in the Nebuchadnezzar's. And not only that, in the prison, the shackles remained on. Today, when a prisoner is taken into his cell, they take off the shackles to let him move around, or to let him spread his feet, because he's secure in the prison cell, not in the prison of Nebuchadnezzar. That's what it means, Asirav. The Medrash interprets this passage, Asirav doesn't just mean the prisoner. It means the shackles that kept him secure, loiposach boisa, were not open. In the prison cell, people would sit their whole life in their prison cell with their shackles on. That's the degree of torture a prisoner would suffer in the jail of Nebuchadnezzar. And that's what Yeshayah is saying. And the people were astonished. How could such a powerful person that was able to get away with conquering nations and destroying cities and had no mercy on its prisoners can fall to such a low? Pasuk Yitches Kol Malchei Goyim Kulam, all of the nations, the kings of the Goyim Kulam Shachvu B'Chavod Ish B'Veso. So now everybody, when Nebuchadnezzar dies, or Nebuchadnezzar, his death and his Churban is so complete, the different interpretation of this pasuk, we're comparing him to the other kings. All the other kings, when they die, they have a respectable funeral and they have a respectable burial. All the kings of the nations, kulam shachvu b'chavod, they lie in honor ish b'veso. Now that can either mean they lie in their graves in a respectable death. Everyone dies eventually, and they have honor, and they have a nice place to be buried. But Nebuchadnezzar, v'atah, pasuk yutes, you in contrast to the kings who are, so again, covered over here means an honorable death, and b'veso means in their grave. They lie respectfully in their permanent home, eternal home. But v'atah, you Nebuchadnezzar, ha'shlachta mikivricha, you will be pulled out of your grave. Kinetzer nisav, like a weed. Netzer means a branch. Nisav means disgusting. What's a disgusting branch? A weed. You have a weed growing in your backyard and it's causing you, it's an eyesore. So what do? You go and you pull it out in disgust and hate. Nebuchadnezzar is lying in his grave. There'll come a point in time where someone will see his grave and pull him out of the grave in disgust as if he was a disgusting weed. Kinetzer nisav. Levush harugim. People die, they're buried in beautiful, and today the takana, Rabbi Yossi, tachrichen. Interesting, it's not relatively modern, going back to the time of the Tanaim, the Avraham, exactly when, but even among Jews, it used to be that Jews were buried in very beautiful clothing. Jews, goyim, lahavdil, elef goyim, when they're buried, I don't know really what goes on, what they do is not important, but from what we understand, going, they are dressed, they are buried in their finest.
Flowers.
Besides their flowers, but the clothing that they wear, that they're dressed, in their coffin, the most beautiful clothing and you name it. That's the way it used to be by Jews as well. Jews were buried in beautiful clothing. Beautiful clothing, I guess, in the preparation for Tchiyas HaNesem. Came a point in time, this is in the Gemara, where people could not afford, became like today people compete to make the nicest wedding, to make the nicest simcha. So in those days, when a person died, there was competition. I mean, there was an expectation that the person have a beautiful funeral, the most beautiful clothing, and people, I guess, would even see the body was exposed to see what he was dressed in. Many people could not afford this lavish expense. So what would they do? They would just run away. They would leave the mace, and they would run away, let someone else take care of it, and the mace would lie bibizayin. Along came Chazal, made a takana, that when a person dies, everyone is the same. Everyone has to be buried in the simplest tachrichin, linen, as cheap as possible. And one of the Tanoim, I believe, said, we're going to start with me. When I die, I want to be buried in the simplest burial shrouds, and that way it will set the tone for what people do. So here, we're going way before that takana was in existence, and people were still buried in beautiful clothing. And so when a king would die, you could imagine how he was dressed. We have a story of people would dig up graves, especially the Egyptians, the pharaohs. They were buried in gold and silver. No, but a criminal, a lowlife, is buried in the clothing in which he was killed. Dirty, filthy, stained, stabbed, and ripped. Nebuchadnezzar, although you were the king of the world, you'll be buried in shmatz. Yeah. Filthy, dirty clothing that are stained with your own blood. Levush harugim, in the clothing of a victim of murder. Mitoanei chorev, stabbed. Toane, it's an unusual word. Lashon Aravi, the Mitzuda says, it's an Aramaic word. It's not your typical word. Not too often do we have words that are not Hebrew. Lashon Aravi means stabbed by the sword. So this is what Yorde. Let's go next. Yorde el Avnevar. You will go down to the stones of the pit. The deeper you go, the more stones. The top soil is normally earth. But when you go further down, you hit stone. You'll be buried deep. The stones of the pit, kifeger, feger means a corpse. A person killed in battle, muvas, that's been trampled upon. When their soldiers are killed in battle, and it's chaos, the horses continue to step on the soldiers, and their bodies are mutilated. They are because they have not been able to be brought in to burial until the war is over. That's what your body will look like, Nebuchadnezzar. You'll be buried like a common criminal in disgusting clothing. Your body will be mutilated, and at some point in time, some will come along and pull you out of the grave and remove you as if you are a eyesore, a disgusting weed. Unlike all the other kings of the world, even the simple kings or simple people, they will rest in honor and dignity, have a nice funeral, and nice clothing, and that's the contrast that we're comparing Nebuchadnezzar to the other kings of the world. There's a well-known Medrash. The Medrash says that Nebuchadnezzar, he lost his mind for 7 years. This was, Daniel even predicted this. We learned Daniel. Daniel had a lot of predictions Daniel made against Nebuchadnezzar. And Nebuchadnezzar, although when he was young, there was great expectation he would become a world leader, but it was told to him that it will come a point in time you'll lose your mind and you'll become like an animal. And indeed that happened. He lost his mind and he went out into the field and he behaved like an animal. And the other animals treated him like an animal. They saw him walking around, crawling around on his fours. He grew long hair and he looked like another animal. At the kach, that the other animals lived with him. They mated with him. They thought that he was an animal. He was a disgusting creature. During the seven year period of time, no one knew what happened to him. He was out in the forest, living like an animal. He disappeared, lost his mind. So they installed his son, Evel Merodach, in his place. The son, Nebuchadnezzar's son, Nebuchadnezzar disappeared. He's gone. We need a leader. Evel Merodach, you'll be the king. So he was the king for 7 years. One day, Nebuchadnezzar recovered. Okay, I'm sure today the doctors would tell you he had manic depressant, bipolar, achleis, I don't know what it was, whatever it was, well, it was derech hateva. He came back! All of a sudden, after 7 years, he returned. So Evel Merodach had to step down. His father's seer, Evel Merodach, stepped down. And worse than that, I think it says that they put him in prison, that his father did not approve of the way he led the world during those 7 years in his absence. So he was imprisoned for the remainder of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar. When Nebuchadnezzar eventually died and was buried, so they came back to Evel Merodach, said, your father now is dead, and now we want you once again to take over. And I think the people, they preferred Evel Merodach over Nebuchadnezzar, because Nebuchadnezzar was the ultimate tyrant. So Evel Merodach said, no way, I'm not going back. I'm afraid, who says my father really died? I thought my father really died last time, and he was gone for 7 years, and suddenly he reappeared. And after he reappeared, he punished me. He put me in this dungeon, and I suffered all these years. I don't want this anymore. I don't want to be king because I'm afraid that he's really alive. He's just faking you out. He faked his death and he's coming back. So they went and they opened up the grave of Nebuchadnezzar. They dragged him out of the grave, and that's what the pasuk there means. Hashlachta mikivrcha kinetzer nisav. They dragged him out of the grave like a disgusting weed, and they threw him in front of Evel Merodach, and they took a sword and they stabbed his body. He's really dead. This time it's for real. This time he's not faking you out. He's really dead. And you have nothing to worry about, and you can now become the king. That's one medrash. There's another medrash that says the story is a little bit different. And that is that after Nebuchadnezzar died, the people was terrorized. They did not want to accept Evel Merodach as king because they thought that Nebuchadnezzar faked his death. So the people did not want to accept Evel Merodach. So Evel Merodach, his son, opened the grave, dragged him out, hashlachta mikivrcha kinetzer nisav, threw him in front of the people on live television. Everyone was watching. Here is Nebuchadnezzar, and he stabbed him. He stabbed his own father to show everyone that he's really dead. This time, there's nothing to fear. The tyranny has come to an end. With me, things will be better. Okay, listen, one more pasuk, we'll stop. Pasuk Chof, Leisechad Itam Bikvura, you will not be one with them Bikvura. In other words, you will not, Seichad means unique in this context. Normally, when a king dies, there's a royal burial plot, there's a crypt, like a special place to go visit the king of the country. No. You're not going to get anything special when you die. In other words, your death will be a relief. People will want to forget you ever existed. You'll not be one with them, which simply goes to mean you're not going to be together with the other kings. All of the other nobles and kings of the country, people, well, he was the first king, the other governors and hashim of the country, you'll not be one with them in the Kvura. Why? Because you will leave in disgrace. Yeah. You will die in disgrace. People will say about you, your legacy will be, ki artzecha shichata, you destroyed your land. You are a tyrant. You are a wicked person. Your own people will curse you. You destroyed your land. Amcha harokta, your people you killed. Lo yikare la'olam zera mireim. This can mean a few things. One interpretation is that your children will not be called, lo yikare la'olam, they will not be called forever the seed of evildoers. It's a polite way of saying that your children will be killed. People will not want any zecher of Nebuchadnezzar. They will seek out your children, your grandchildren, and they will kill them to make sure there is no remnant of you in this world whatsoever. Now, of course, Belshazzar and Vashti. Vashti was the great-granddaughter of Nebuchadnezzar. She was killed. But he obviously had a lot of other children and grandchildren all over the place. And the Paz says, you will not be called Olam. In other words, years will pass where you'll seek out a descendant, an enikel of Nebuchadnezzar, not to be found. Lo yikarel olam will not be called forever Zera. Oh, you see this person over here? He is the child. He is the Zera Mirayim of the evildoers. He is the descendant of the Rosh HaMarusha and Nebuchadnezzar. That's very interesting because by Haman you don't have this. Haman, we know Chazal tell us that B'nai Banim Shel Haman Lamdu Tabim Nebrak. the descendants of Haman, somehow they wound up in Bnei Brak. They're learning Torah. They converted. We know about Asher, Asancheiriv. Also, the Chazal tell us had descendants that converted and joined Klal Yisrael. And you know, I mean, it's half the year you read the newspapers. They have our Azur, that Hitler. I mean, I don't know, converted, but I remember reading not so long ago a whole write up on one of Hitler's. I don't know, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, where he lives, what he does. Like, you would never know. You would never know where he comes from. It's hard for the mind to absorb such a thing. How could the descendant of Haman, we're far removed from Haman, so maybe it's such a shock. But dealing with someone like Hitler, like, it's so disturbing to see such a thing like this. It survived. What does that mean exactly? We don't know. But here, when it comes to Nebuchadnezzar, it's not like that. Nebuchadnezzar's churban is complete. There are no descendants of Nebuchadnezzar. Lo yikore le'olam zera merim. Not like Haman, not like Sanchev, not like other Rishon. There's nothing left, no descendants left of Nebuchadnezzar. And we said this already a few times. It's because Nebuchadnezzar has a unique place in the history of the world, because he was the one that destroyed the Beis HaMikdash. No one imagined such a thing could happen with the Shechina of David, of Shlomo, such a bias of Kedusha. How could that be destroyed? He destroyed it. The one that destroyed it will bear the brunt of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's anger. At Ve'kach lo yikar li olam zera mireim. Okay, we'll stop here. Pascha, keep in mind that we're going to try, and no pressure on anyone, Chas Hashem, Friday, to also have a shiur. If anyone would like to come, just we'll try it out 1 week. We'll see what happens. I'm not asking for any pressure. We'll learn two sessions for approximately 1 hour in total, a half an hour of Yeshaya. I think the three things that we learned in Yeshaya is most fit for Friday. Half an hour of Yeshaya, and then about a half an hour in Chumash, a shir on the parsha, Jush, and Yonah Yoma, the Nogea the parsha. We'll try it out. For 1 week, we'll try it out this Friday, Mir Tashem, same time at 9:30 to approximately 10:30 or a little bit after 10:30. Okay, now we will do Mishnah Berurah. One more Mishnah Berurah. Anyone need a Mishnah Berurah? One more here. We have to maybe get some more.
Oh, yeah, you did.
Does anyone need a Mishnah Berurah? Does everyone have? Okay. So I'm going to get from the shelf. We need more. Okay, we have some interesting halachas today. Very interesting ideas in the laws of Shabbos and Erevin. Okay, I have to just finish up the Ramah. Let me tell you we're up.